On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Sweet Tuesday morning came a new smile.
Tuesday.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hi, what's your name?
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
What's your name? Where do you live? What's your social security number? Uh-huh. How can I get in touch with you after 12 o'clock at night? What size shoe do you wear? What's your bra size? What's your pants size? Huh? Nice to meet you. All right. All right. You know, there's a dating app called Plenty of Fish. What? Why would you say something like that? Oh, there's plenty of fish out there. Okay, so dating is like catching fish? What are you talking about? I don't like that app for that reason. They've named it insufficiently. Apps. I'm sick of apps. Everything's got an app. Yeah. I called called the pharmacy yesterday. CVS, I think it's the biggest pharmacy in the country. I'm really not sure. Called them up. I wanted to speak to the pharmacist because I needed a refill on one of my prescriptions, one of my 3,000 prescriptions that I take every day. Takes me half the day just to take all the pills I need to stay alive. I'm kidding. It's not that bad, but it's still considerable. I've always said, and then you know I've always said, you don't have to ask a person how old they are. All you have to do is ask them how many pills they take on a daily basis, and you'll get a pretty good idea of how old they are. How many pills do you take a day? Just my protein pill, and my vitamin. I see. What are you, about like 25? That's right. How many pills do you take a day? Let's see, there's the cholesterol, the high blood pressure, the pre-diabetes pill, that's right. Then I got that, and then I got the, for the eyes, and then I got, I take about 12 pills a day. You're 82, that's right, how did you know that? Anyway, so I called CVS because I wanted to speak to the pharmacist. I needed a refill on one of my prescriptions. Well, it's not that easy. No one answers the phone, first of all. It's been so long since I've... Excuse me. Phlegm is starting to congregate within my throat. All right, phlegm. We're going to meet in his throat and we're going to make sure he can't talk while he does his show. Come on, everybody. Anyway, nobody answers the phone anymore, unless it's a private residence, and even then. You cannot call a store and get someone to answer. Hello, how can I help you? That doesn't happen anymore. It's a thing of the past. Don't even cry about it. It ain't happening anymore. No, who picks up the phone at a CVS? An AI recording. This is CVS. Thank you for calling. If you want the things, press 1. If you want the random, press 3. If you have the COVID-19, press 3. Stop at the COVID-19 thing. If you have COVID, immediately hang up. Don't even touch the phone. Just get out of here. Just get out of here if you have COVID. Stop it. That's enough. That's enough. And because of the high volume of calls because of COVID, let's stop with that excuse. It doesn't exist anymore. Stop with the COVID thing. Fortunately, we're through it. Let's stop dwelling on it, shall we? If you have COVID, immediately call your doctor. And I'm trying to. So I'm calling CVS. I just want a refill. And I've got like, and please listen to our options carefully. We have changed our options within the past 3 minutes. Listen to all the options. This should only take 3 hours. If you want to speak to somebody who has astigmatism, press 1. If you want to speak to a pharmacist who isn't there, press 3. If you want to leave a message for the pharmacist's daughter, press 7. It's stop it. Just stop it. All I want to do is speak to somebody. I want to get something refilled. Took me an hour to get there. I had to scream into the phone 1,000 times. Speak to pharmacist. Speak to the... Here are 7 options. If you want toothpaste, press 1. If you want your laundry soap, press 3. Speak to pharmacist. You stupid recording. I want to speak to the pharmacist. We don't understand the freaking word you're saying, so hold on. We're going to get you somebody. Speak to the pharmacist, you stupid human being, you. Oh, God. It's just awful. I don't know. I have to be on the planet. I mean, this is the only place I know of, but it's disgusting. I can't speak to people anymore. Not that I did that very well, but at least I could reason with a human being. I could throw in a little humor to make them like me and get things done. I can't do that anymore. I have to listen to all the options. It's so frustrating. None of the options ever are anything that I want. And they're naming every single option except the one that I'm looking for. And after 3 hours of listening to options, you finally get through the right department, and then you get the recording. I'm sorry, but the person you're calling isn't here right now. Leave a message, and maybe we'll get back to you within the decade. I'm really not sure. Because of COVID, we have so many more calls, and we're so... would you like a text? What? What? Would you like us to text you a picture of our penises? What are you talking about? You're going to be on hold for like 6 hours. Would you prefer that we text you the information? You don't even know it. That's not the information. I want to speak to a person. I want to reason with them. I want to explain. I want them to explain things to me. I want to speak to a person and make me feel better about this. So we text you the link to go to the bathroom. Do you have to go to the bathroom? Can we link you? Your number 752 in the queue. Please hold on. We'll be with you next Thursday. If you press 1, we'll call you back. Yeah, fat chance, but you can leave your name and number if you want. It'll make you feel better, whatever. You know we're not going to call you back, but leave it anyway. What the hell? What are you doing? What happened to customer service? If I could leave every single company that frustrates me with these greeting and recordings and option things, here's the thing. Listen to Ron. Listen, it's my name. Listen to Ron. If you want to start a company, here's what you do. Hire a lot of phone operator people so that no one has to speak to any artificial intelligence anymore. And they can talk to a person. A person will answer the phone and say, "Hello, this is the Bopsco company. How can I help you?" You start a company like that, I am your customer. I don't care how shitty your product is. I'll be with you because that's customer service with human beings. Did you know that human beings are looking for jobs to feed their family? How about that idea? They'll be happy to sit on the phone all day. They can do it from their house probably. Because of COVID, that isn't here anymore. I'm sorry, but because of COVID, we can't answer your phone calls ever. We can't operate here. I don't know what we're doing. I think it's Verizon, which pisses me off a lot too. There's absolutely no people involved unless you go through like 50 steps first. It's like going through a baggage check, a security check at the airport. You can't just walk in. We got to ask you 1,000 questions. We got to redirect you, and then we have to go through your stuff. We have to make sure there's nothing on you. So they call Verizon, and the first thing that they say, we're experiencing a high call volume. That happens every time I call. It's not just, well, this particular time of day right now, we're experiencing a high call volume, call back next week, something like it's always that. They're always experiencing a high call volume. Let's see, what does Verizon do? Do they get involved with phones? They should understand how frustrating it is not to be able to use it. How many times people call Verizon because their phone was stolen, and that's not one of the options when you call. It's not. It's like what? Hey! Quick! My phone was stolen. I have a report. My phone was. Sorry, that's not an option. I mean, what do you want? Do you want to pay your bill? Oh my God! Shut up. So call Verizon, and it's always like they're experiencing a high call volume. Excuse me, Verizon. Excuse your stupidity, and my stupidity for not understanding how stupid you are. If you're experiencing a high call volume all the time, every day, every hour, why don't you hire some more people to answer the phone? How about that idea? Oh, I'll sell you stuff. Oh, I'll sell you the phone. I'll make it convenient for you to pay your bill on on the phone. We'll do all that. But answer your questions? No, I'm sorry. Can't do that. Can't do that. Can't do it. I swear, any of you out there starting a business, if you have a business, if you have a human being available to people, not robots, not online. I mean a voice where you can participate in a phone conversation. Oh my God, do people do that? Yes, they've been doing it for centuries now since they invented the damn phone. But all of a sudden, we can't talk to people anymore. Now, let me tell you something. Sometimes that's a blessing in disguise. But when you got a problem, which is when you would call these companies, when everything's going fine, you don't call Verizon and say, I just wanted to call and say, everything's going well. Have a nice day. I sat on hold for half an hour just to tell you everything's going just fine. Thank you very much. When people call customer service, they got a problem. They've got a problem and they need an answer. And if you're a human being and you can talk to me for 45 seconds, I think we can wrap up this problem really quickly. But instead, you make me go through all these steps and different options. Come on, man. Come on. I'm using your product. You're servicing me. Now you're throwing it back in my face. And I don't want to go to your app. And I don't want to have things, frequently asked questions are online. Can I send you the link? No, you can take the phone back and shove it up your ass. That's what you can do. But that's not an option. I don't want a link to your app. I want to speak to somebody. And by the way, I'm American and I have an English speech thing going. If I could just speak to somebody who sounds like they live here also. Now, that sounded really bad, but don't give me any lip. You feel the same way I do. If you speak English and you get a customer service rep who's somewhere in a different country halfway across the globe and speaks very broken English and the phone connection is really poor, you know that they're not down the street. You know they're halfway around the world. I mean, maybe you can help me, but I need to understand what you're saying. I'm not being, no, I'm not. I'm not. Don't accuse me of things. It's just when I'm speaking to somebody that speaks my language, things seem to be a little bit more communicative. I'm tired of saying, excuse me, could you repeat that? Excuse me, I didn't understand that. What did you say? I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you... I'm sick of saying that. I mean, I really don't think that if you live in India and you have a problem with an Indian product that you bought in India and you live in India and everybody around you speaks like that, I don't think you want to call the company's customer service and hear a guy from Brooklyn or the Bronx. Hey, how can I help you there? What's going on with your product here? What's your problem?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Where's Mel? Why don't you understand me? What are you talking about? I mean, I have trouble with Southern accents. I can't understand them half the time. They're twanging all over the place. I'm sorry. We want to, when we call a company, we need help. We need help. The company thinks the only reason you're calling is to pay your bill. Wishful thinking. I'm very frustrated. Why does everything have to be so difficult all of a sudden? And you know I'm right, and I don't care how old you are. You have to go through this just like I do. Why can't we hire some people to do these jobs and pay them so that they can raise a family and everybody's happy? Artificial intelligence. I don't know if that has to do with machines or people, to be honest with you. Intelligence seems to be a scarce commodity. If you're making machines smarter than people, which really wouldn't be too difficult, the bar is really low on the intelligence definition. I think we're going to have some problems. I don't know if I'll be on the planet at that point. Self-driving cars. Excuse me? Seriously? Read the statistics. The auto companies actually say that self-driving cars are safer than humans behind the wheel. The data shows that there are 50% more accidents with self-driving cars. Tesla has a ton of lawsuits against them for crashes in self-driving cars. Who's responsible if you have a self-driving car? Take your hands off the wheel, you go into automatic mode and driving on the highway, wherever, and you get into a crash. Who's responsible for that? That hasn't been decided. You can sue the car manufacturer. Good luck. Can't even talk to them on the phone. Too many options. It's awful. You're responsible if you are the owner of the car and you are the driver. You're responsible for that crap if the car decides to get in an accident when it's self-driving. Come on. Self-driving cars will not really be available to the general public in any great satisfaction until the year 2035. We're a little over 10 years away from that. Thank God. You need to perfect that. And if you're going to start selling electric cars, and God love you, because otherwise the planet's going to go to hell even more, we have to go to electric cars. We have to get off the fuel deal. Well, you got to start inventing batteries that'll be easier to charge and charge really fast. Can't charge my car overnight. You got to charge my car within like 10 minutes. Has to be like maybe a little extended visit to the service station, but you should be able to plug in 5 minutes later, unplug, and now you got a full tank of electric, whatever the fuck that is. That's not perfected. I've got great ideas, but we haven't perfected them yet. And this artificial intelligence is already causing problems with unions. You're going to watch a lot of strikes going on. It's going to be a big problem. We are on the threshold of destroying ourselves by our technology. I guarantee you, man. Guarantee you. Who invented the gun? Yeah, that worked out. Who invented the atom bomb, the nuclear bomb? Yeah, that worked out. Yeah, you watch and see what happens, man. Watch. All right, well, so much for the harbinger of death conversation. Just, I guess I'm in a complaining mood today, and I apologize. I just heeding the word here, that's all. I just... so frustrated when I try to call companies. So frustrated. I can never get anybody on the phone to talk to people. Don't get me wrong. I don't care for people. They don't serve any purpose unless I need their help. That's when we can communicate and we can bond. And I tell you, when I find a company that has like really incredible customer service, wow. I'm on top of them. I love it. I love it. That's my suggestion to every single company. Hire some human beings that can speak English, depending on where your company is and who the bulk of your customers are. And get them on the phone. Get them on that phone to speak to people. They will love you. And then you can tout that you have the only customer service in the world that has people in it. Where people actually answer the phone. Anyway, we have a guest coming up momentarily, and we also have a commercial break, which is very, very important for many, many reasons. I don't know what they are, but I know that there are reasons for having a commercial break.
Give the gift that says, I love you. The gift that says, happy birthday. The gift that says, get well soon. The gift that says, you're the reason I went into the priesthood. The gift that says, congratulations on not getting indicted. The gift that says, I want to cover you in warm chocolate pudding. The gift that says, good luck in clown college. The gift that says, thanks for removing my unsightly wart. The gift that says, sorry about giving you food poisoning. The gift that says, I'll see you in hell. The gift that says, remember the good times we had in prison. The gift that says, I want to make sweet love to you on the white sand beaches of Rio while your hot cousin watches. The gift that says, thank you for the kidney. The gift that says, you deserve all the best, but this will have to do. The gift that says, thanks, Jesus. Whatever you want to say, you can say it beautifully with a timeless gift from Phyllis Gorman's House of Macaroni Art on Route 94 just past the Rotary, across from Sweaty Palmer's Adult Emporium.
You know, Chapman joins us now. He's written a very interesting book. It's kind of a story, but actually he's a former motorcycle racer, which is a whole nother world. Thanks for being with us today, Dino.
Good morning, Ron. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
How long were you racing motorcycles?
Started racing in 2003 and finished off in 2009 was the last time I raced.
Wow. Okay. A different world, I would assume, once you get into the really heavy stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of a dual life that you lead as a motorcycle racer, especially at the level that I was racing at. And the story of the racers takes the reader along that kind of journey. Yeah. It's a story about working class Joes, you know, average guys.
Right.
Who, Monday to Friday, they're... you know, butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers, and then come Friday afternoon, they pull on a leather suit and become Superman and go and throw themselves around a racetrack at 140 miles an hour
yeah.
just for the thrill of it, and then take it all off again on Sunday afternoon and go back to work.
Weird. You started doing this professionally, I would guess that's the proper term, at the age of 34, is that right?
Yeah, I started late.
Yeah.
Professionally wouldn't be strictly true because I didn't earn my living doing it.
Right.
I was an amateur racer.
Okay.
But yeah, I was late starting. Most people start as kids when they're 14 or 13 years old.
Yeah. How long did it take before the trophy started coming?
believe it or not, they started coming in the first year.
Get out.
And it's sort of, no, it's true. It's counterintuitive. The first year I raced the Kawasaki 400 as a novice, and they enter you into novice-only categories sometimes. So you race with the big boys, yeah. But then at the end of the day, they'll have a novice race for all the guys who have not completed 10 races yet. Mm-hmm. And I won a couple of those, you know, for the newcomers.
Wow.
But then as you move on through the grades, and you get better and you get faster, and you move up to national and international level, then you're starting to race with guys with real talent, and you know, just getting in the top 20 is something, let alone getting on the podium.
Yeah. I mean, your experiences in that kind of reads like a movie or a motion picture, with the romance, the rivalry, and disaster. I mean, it sounds like a film.
Yeah, and that's why it makes a good story. You know, motorcycle racing is incredibly addictive. It's jam-packed full of adrenaline. And a weekend of racing consists of almost dying, you know, once or twice during the weekend, to sinking beers with your buddies, to eating off a barbecue. Sometimes there'll be conflict, sometimes there'll be anger, and then, yes, there is romance, you know, it happens in real life and it happens in the story.
You know, I know some friends who drive motorcycles, and the talk is, did you have your accident yet? Because it's just, it eventually, eventually occurs. Sometimes it's life-changing, sometimes, you know, it's worse. Not only did you face it, but I understand that some of your buddies that were going through this actually didn't make it, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true. And there's, you know, as I said, it's incredibly addictive, but there's a trade-off for that. You know, nothing in life is free. And every guy who, whether a guy is on the road or on a motocross track or on a racetrack, when you put your leg over a motorcycle, you know what you're doing and you know what the risks are. Ironically, you're actually safer on a racetrack riding fast than you are on the road by a long stretch.
Oh, sure, I get that,
You know, you are much safer on a racetrack. And anybody that's riding fast on the road or, you know, really loves those mountain twisties on the weekend, I'd encourage those guys to slow down, get a slower bike, and then get a nice little track bike and take it to a track on a weekend and let your hair down then. But don't do it on the road, you know, it's way more dangerous.
Well, of course, I mean, when you're on a track, you're with other people who know how to do this. When you're on the open roads and you're riding fast, you're with people that can kill you. So anyway.
You know, there's drunk guys, there's police officers, there's hard things at the side of the road that you hit when you come off, and that's not the case at the racetrack.
Certainly. Boy, that'd be interesting if they had speed cops there on a racetrack. That'd be wrong.
Well, they wouldn't catch you.
That's true. So that's the good part. What did you do after you left racing? I'm curious. What would you possibly go into that would happen from that?
Well, I've been a bit of an adrenaline junkie all my life. I've been very lucky. You know, I played a lot of contact sports in my younger years, and the reason I started racing was because they said, the doctor told me I couldn't play rugby anymore. So that's why I took up the racing. Then when the racing finished, I just went to fishing. Much more sedate.
Holy crap.
And writing about racing, of course. That's where the races came from. But now I'm in my 50s now. I'm married. I've got three grown-up. I'm not going to be throwing myself up a racetrack. But I do really still get a kick out of writing about it.
Yeah. I'm just curious. I don't know if your home situation was a result of racing. Was there a lot of romance, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, in that world, like one would think there would be?
Yeah, it's a little bit hedonistic, the whole race world. You rather like at a rock concert, believe it or not.
That's what I thought.
You know, you get groupies who follow races, even at the lowest levels. And if you're young and you're good looking, then there's a whole recipe for a lot of fun to be had on a weekend.
Wow.
And a good bit of that goes on in the book as well.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the book. It's called The Racers, is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And it's available everywhere. It's actually what it is. It's an exciting thrill ride by the person that took the exciting thrill ride.
That's true. Although I do make the definition that the plot is completely fiction, mm-hmm. but a lot of the things that happen in the story, mm-hmm. Things that really happened in real life.
Yes.
I think that's what makes it relatable.
Yeah, I would assume that most of the fiction is based upon actual situations, but not so. But
yeah.
Yes, but no, but yes, but no, right?
You've got it spot on.
You got it. Okay, the book is available everywhere?
It's available everywhere. If people want to know more about it, if they're interested, just at the sound of it, they can find out more on dinochapmanbooks.com. Or if they want to go ahead and order it, they can get it on Amazon or at any good bookstore.
Great. And by the way, as you explained to me, Dino is D-E-N-O, Chapman, and that's where you'll find him. Perfect.
That's right. D-E-N-O, chapmanbooks.com or Amazon. Just look for The Racers by Dino Chapman.
Wonderful. Well, pleasure speaking to you. Enjoy fishing. Have a good...
Thanks very much, Ron.
Thanks, Dino.
Pleasure, and thank you so much for having me on the show.
Pleasure. Thanks. Well, that'll do it for me today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Oh, yeah. But until that time arrives, make it a great day. Will you do that? I wish you peace.